Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. The Science of Happiness is proudly brought to you by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Discover the latest findings in neuroscience, cosmology, and the origins of life at templeton.org. Hi, this is Dacher Keltner. Very often, the greatest challenges and trials in our lives, combat, natural disaster, economic trauma, mortality, return us to our nobler tendencies and our greater sense of purpose in life. Yes, we have to watch out during this time of coronavirus for the racism, xenophobia, and aggression that can arise during times like these. And we have to respond with force with our capacities for compassion, connection, and creativity. As we record this, we're in a studio on a vacated campus, UC Berkeley, where I teach. Many of us feel the fear of the spread of COVID-19. We're keeping our distance from others who bring such strength and love to our lives. This social distancing obviously is crucial. It's saving lives, but it's also disrupting the very fabric of how we get along with others. Businesses are suffering, families are separated. Students I've spoken with feel the racist underpinnings of how the virus is named by many, or what social distancing means to them if they come from diverse backgrounds. And the economic consequences and disease, which often hit the poorest hardest, may very likely follow with law-like regularity. We know, though, that the ideas and practices that we share at the Greater Good Science Center are often activated during peril and trauma. We turn to others and strong bonds to survive. And the benefits of these practices are most pronounced during times of hardship and stress like today. We are offering resources such as new articles and practices for people really concerned about COVID-19 at greatergood.berkeley.edu/coronavirus. And for the next few months, the Science of Happiness is going to be sharing practices to help us with the complex changes brought about by our responses to coronavirus. The social distancing, disrupted work, difficulties perhaps paying bills, and lack of physical contact. We feel more committed now than ever to share science-tested practices that can help us feel calmer, happier, and more connected to loved ones. Our guest this week is Jennifer Kitt. She's the CEO of the Kitt Institute, a nonprofit that she started with her daughter to develop strong, whole, and empowered women. When we asked Jennifer to choose a practice to boost happiness in her life, she chose one that makes us feel more connected to others by manipulating spaces in our own homes and our places of work. Jennifer joins us today from her home studio in Georgia to tell us how the practice went. Jennifer, thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
We asked you to choose a practice to bring more happiness into your life, and you chose the Reminders of Connectedness exercise. This practice walks you through the process of considering how you can add reminders of social connection to your home or your office or your classroom. So what it does is you look around your home and sort of see what kind of objects or words surround you. Next, it asks you to count how many of these objects or words or images are related to social connectedness. And then you notice whether there are spaces, empty walls where you might add things, and then make things that help fill those empty spaces with connection. And then finally, to think about how your furniture is actually arranged to either get people closer together or not. What do you see?
So the first thing that I did was really to take a moment to look around my office. I work from home, and my sacred office space is really, really important to me. And I was really struck by this first step of what kinds of objects and words and images surround you. So Dacher, for me, I've got a bulletin board of all of my sheroes, Angela Bassett and Viola Davis, and pictures, right, of women, powerful women that I really aspire to be like, you know, to be these kind of boss babes. And then looking at my walls, I'm seeing a lot of ideas that connect me to myself. I'm just a girl girl boss building her empire. That's one of my favorite sayings on my walls. And so there's this idea when I was looking around that there's a lot of ways that I'm not only connecting with others, but connecting with myself as well. And then step two, counting how many of these objects and words and images relate to social connectedness. And this is where I think I'm embarrassed because it's well over 20 or 25. I think I stopped at about 25 or 30. Interacting words, community, together, friendship. Mm. A lot of that I found in my office, which was step two. And then you asked step three, to notice whether there are empty walls or shelves where I could add new objects. No, there's not anything empty, so I'm going to have to empty some things. And then step four, next time that I'm out shopping and looking through my belongings, looking for things that might help me to find objects that evoke more connection, maybe even in a subtle way. This has been challenging since doing the exercise because I've been doing this exercise in this very spiral downward that we've been taking nationwide. So there really hasn't been much out shopping, right? So that's still something that I'm looking forward to. And then finally, considering the furniture, how my furniture is placed. Well, in my office, it's very much placed for connection. And even now, bringing in more chairs and more seating because my husband and myself were doing a lot of family video conferencing. Last night, we had a happy hour together with our children via video teleconference so that we're actually moving through our lives. And this week, I'm planning a virtual dinner, a virtual Sunday dinner for everyone. So everyone has their own food in their own place, but we're all going to eat together. So I'm arranging furniture in my office, and then that extends out into my home for way more communal situations to include the computer and my husband and myself. So it's a different time that we're in right now.
You know, we know from work by people like Naomi Eisenberger and Louisa Pavey that, you know, just images of people, seeing their faces, hearing their voices, the voice is this powerful basis or language of connection, really makes us feel safe, and it sort of quiets the source of anxiety in our minds these days. You know, a lot of the people that I'm talking to, including a lot of my students, really isolated, feeling lonely. I just got a paper recently that the quarantining that took place with the other epidemics actually leads to elevated depression and anxiety. Really worrisome. You know, what are some of the words of wisdom you offer to people who are wondering, like, how can I connect to my child who's far away? How can I connect to my aging parents? How can I connect to my community members? What would you say?
So for anyone that is under 30, right, or even under 35, it's a no-brainer. FaceTime. And then other kinds of connectedness that happens with the push of a button. And so that idea that we are looking at each other, I think that's been amped up more in the last several days, actually, for me than ever before. So it's that FaceTime and it's that live time. So we're actually sitting down together. I mentioned, you know, the happy hour that I had with my kids yesterday. And spouses, their spouses as well, just an hour of gathering together and, you know, beverage of choice. They're all adults, so it's very legal. and just coming together and talking, right? Mm. But, and here's the big but, my mom and my husband's mom and others that have older folks who are not technologically savvy, now we're having to go to the telephone. A lot more phone calls that are happening, I know, between me and my mom and my husband and his parents, because my mom doesn't even have internet. So a lot of telephone calling, because again, live voice and hearing voice, I think, reminds us of being connected that kind of way. But I just cannot stress enough live, using technology for what it's really good at doing, which is bringing us together. And in this age, we can see.
I've been offering my happiness class to Berkeley undergrads online now, and I had office hours and a bunch showed up and they were like, make sure you keep it live, because even in the digital world, sensing that other people are there and sort of learning together is powerful.
Absolutely.
I was talking to a UC Berkeley student yesterday who's from China. Remarkably, she had seen the coronavirus break out in China, and then she came back to school in Berkeley and is seeing it break out in the United States. And she was here by herself without family and really struggling with that. And probably, like many of our listeners or many people in the United States and elsewhere, that being quarantined away from our social connections, away from the people we love very often, the reminders of connectedness practice becomes more poignant. So what would you advise someone who's suddenly in a situation where, like, God, I can't touch or reach out and be with these people? How can I use this practice to change my living circumstance?
I think that creating a sacred space and a sacred time for you is going to be my best advice. And here's what I mean by that. At the end of the day, before Corona and even after Corona, we are with ourselves more than any other being. I can be in a home with my husband, but I am still inside of Jennifer. And so to me, this is the time, even when we are socially isolated, to reconnect and get to know you. So that means setting aside a specific amount of time and space. I know for me, it's got to be a beautiful space, and maybe it's with a candle, or maybe it's with something that's fragrant. Maybe it's with a faux flower if you can't get out and get real flowers, or whatever is going to bring that positivity to that space that you're going to be in. And when I'm talking about a space, it could be in a closet, it could be at a chair, it could be at a table, but really being intentional about checking in with you. I think that that is so critical. I've always thought that beforehand, but now I think it becomes even more critical, because the self-talk that we have going on the inside of us is going to make or break this experience for us. So I highly, highly, highly recommend, for sacred self time, that you've got to take, if it's 2 minutes, if it's 3 minutes, if it's an hour, you've got to make sure that you're intentionally keeping you up to speed, up to par, by making sure that you're either meditating or reading a book, but setting aside that time to check in with your heart so that you can make sure that you're staying okay.
You know, this trauma is getting us to rethink our own private space, and you're suggesting, you know, we make it more sacred. What would you advise somebody in terms of, like, making a little space in their room more sacred and have these reminders of connectedness?
So it's this idea of making sure that we have, I'll call them zones, right, in our home. It's really difficult without structuring a space and a time for things for many people. I know it is for me. So, for example, we know what we use the bathroom for. We know what we use the kitchen for. We know what we use the living space for. But now, because we're all isolated, all of our spaces, right, become this big, it could become a big blob. So what I'm suggesting is that people actually stake their claim, whether it be, you know, if I had little ones at home, maybe it's a colorful beach towel, right, that they can just kind of hang out. I mean, here in Georgia, we do get a little bit of sun. So hanging out in front of my big windows so they can pretend like they're at the beach or whatever the case may be, that's a sacred space. That towel becomes a sacred space. For women, it might be, you know, honestly, our bathtubs. I know my bathtub took me through a whole lot when my kids were young, right? So it's a bubble bath, and it might be a bubble bath. It might be even at midnight when everybody else is asleep, but that's sacred space time. So what I'm suggesting is that we find these very intentional places that we have our sacred items that really bring us instantly into that place of being mindful, being compassionate, decompressing, de-stressing, thinking about how we are thinking and how we are feeling. And if you are alone in your house or in your space and you don't have that kind of connectedness, you still can make a space and a place for yourself that's uniquely your own, that you say, when I get into this space, it's going to only be about me and making sure that I'm okay. Whether you're taking a book with you or a magazine with you, or if you're listening to your, you know, your music or whatever the case may be. Being intentional about checking in on yourself.
So, Jennifer, thank you for being on our show and for all the wisdom you have about doing the reminders of connectedness practice.
Thank you for having me.
Humans have a strong propensity for kindness and generosity. It's a central theme in the science of happiness. Sometimes we just need to be nudged, as happens in the reminders of connectedness practice. Melinda Carpenter, a professor of developmental psychology at the University of St. Andrews in the UK, wanted to see if this is the case for babies, too. She conducted an experiment to see if basic reminders of connectedness could spark kindness in babies as young as 18 months old.
So what we did was show them 8 different photographs of familiar household objects in the foreground.
A teapot, a shoe, a mug, a clock, things like that.
And in the background of the photographs, we had 2 little wooden dolls standing in a close affiliative relationship together. So they were standing face to face, looking at and smiling at each other.
But the other kids in the study saw either two stacks of blocks or a single doll standing alone or two dolls turned away from one another. And again, these were all in the background of a picture that had a household item in the foreground. Afterwards, Melinda and her team did a helping test. An experimenter came in the room holding a box and six wooden sticks in her hands. She then knelt down at a little child-sized table and accidentally let the sticks fall to the floor.
So she started reaching towards the sticks unsuccessfully and saying things like, oh, my sticks, they've fallen on the floor. And then if the infant still hadn't helped, she said, oh, my sticks, I need them back. And then finally at the end, if they hadn't helped yet, she asked them, can you help me, please?
This was the 18-month-old's chance to help, and some did. The kids who saw the image with the dolls facing each other in the background, what Melinda calls the together condition, were much more likely to help pick up the sticks than the other kids.
The infants in the together condition helped three times as often as kids in any of the other conditions.
All it took to get the kids to help others, what researchers call prosocial behavior, was a subtle reminder of connection and affiliation between people. In this case, a simple picture with two dolls facing each other in the background.
In our minds, in our brains, we have a link, an association between affiliation to the group and pro-social behavior. And so if we can cue affiliation, then this will make pro-social behavior more likely to occur.
When we create reminders of social connection in our spaces, we disrupt our tendency to focus on ourselves and our problems, and we reorient our attention to other people. And that's even true for young kids as young as 18 months old. Charles Darwin and His Holiness the Dalai Lama both believe that sympathy is our strongest instinct. But it's really up to us to create the environments that allow us to express that potential. If you would like to try the Reminders of Connectedness practice, visit our Greater Good in Action website at ggia.berkeley.edu. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, we also have practices, resources, and new articles for people facing COVID-19 at greatergood.berkeley.edu/coronavirus. Please share with us what's inspiring you using the hashtag #happinesspod or emailing us at greater@berkeley.edu. I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness. Our podcast is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX. Our senior producer is Shuka Kalantari. Production assistance is from Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our associate producers are Brett Simpson and Ariella Markowitz. Our executive producer is Jane Park. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. Our science director is Emiliana Simon-Thomas. Special thanks to UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness.